Today on our program, I'm pleased to welcome two professionals in the industry, Chris Arlen and Michelle Murray. Chris is a consultant that works with building service contractors and helps them navigate the challenges of landing contracts, specifically with RFPs. And Michelle is the CEO of Living Wage for Us. And many of you might not have heard about that organization, but today we're going to dig into what Michelle's organization can do for the cleaning industry. So welcome to the program, both of you.
Thank you.
Hi, Jeff.
Chris, you and I have discussed at ISSA Show North America the concept of an emerging idea, which I find fascinating. Why don't you expound on that a little bit?
As a consultant to facility service contractors, janitorial contractors, I do a lot of technical proposal writing. And in that work, I'm constantly looking for a competitive advantage, right? Trying to help them solution a new, better way of winning contracts. Over time, through LinkedIn, I saw the Living Wage of in the UK. And the more I learned about it, the more I understood that this was a potential new competitive advantage. Now, in my work as a technical proposal writer, there's always an opportunity in an RFP to provide an alternative proposal. And historically or traditionally, those alternatives are an opportunity for the contractor to propose either new technology or new process or something new, innovative. And it typically raises the price a little. And so in my work, I'm always looking for those kind of advantages. And when I came across the Living Wage, I started to see that it was a potential new competitive advantage for select customers. Meaning that this isn't in my work, this isn't the solution for all technical proposals, but there are end customers, building owners and managers out there who are seeking the opportunity to do good. And with an alternative proposal, that gives the contractor a voluntary way to provide this alternative for the buyers, the building owners and managers, to actually choose something like a Living Wage. So that's where I came across it and met up with Michelle, learned more about it. And it's incredibly exciting, but it's incredibly complex. So I wish there was a black and white simplistic answer one could give. But as you know, in the States here, it's a pretty complex union, non-union, large opportunity, small opportunity, tight labor market. There's a lot of nuances that take working out. And thank God Michelle's here to answer all those technical questions.
Wow. Thanks, Chris.
Yes, this is an interesting discussion. Living wages, that phrase itself must get the attention of a lot of people. Thinking about what we pay people or how this plays into contracts and negotiations. And Michelle, thank you for joining us today and representing your organization, Living Wage for Us. I know you're involved with this. You work in different industries. Today, we're going to talk about the cleaning industry. But why don't you share some initial thoughts on what this can do for those watching today?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I think one of the interesting things that we're seeing now is the rise of the living wage movement, but it isn't new, right? It's been around for a very long time. And going back, popes have talked about it. Old presidents 50 years ago were talking about it. What has grabbed the attention now of living wage movement is really a combination of understanding that there's a huge gap in between worker wages and what companies might be earning, right? That inequality that's rising across the US really drives an interest in, wait a minute, are those that are working getting enough of a share that they can even support themselves in a decent way? And also, are there business benefits to making sure workers are earning enough to achieve a decent living? So really what we're seeing is that rise in interest affects an entire ecosystem. It means that investors are talking to companies and saying, we want living wage to represent the S in your ESG, so we know whether or not we want to invest in you as a company. It means that those companies are looking at their suppliers and saying, we want to commit to a living wage for ourselves and also for you all out there. You know, we want to know what you're paying your workers. We want to make sure that we're doing what makes sense. And that's on a broader sense. If you look at things like the business roundtable a few years ago, changing the purpose of business to be inclusive of workers and making and sort of acknowledging that it's not just shareholders, it is also workers and stakeholder capitalism. So this whole movement wraps up and moves forward. And I think of it as there is a wave coming, right? And those who want to benefit of it, get out in front of it and say, I realize that wages are moving. You'll see it in the tight labor market post-COVID and difficulty retaining workers and hiring and recruiting. You'll see it more and more. Either you sort of get pulled along as the wages as advance from behind, or you get out in front and say, rather than throwing a dart against the wall to understand where my wages should be to adjust for everything going on, maybe I need to understand what the actual cost of living is in this area and think about how much someone needs to make to cover the basic necessities of decency.
All right, good information. So many questions. And Chris, feel free to chime in when you want to tie something Michelle says to an RFP or the industry.
If I could, I'm here because of the commercial aspect, right, to win contracts. Mm-hmm. And the advantage of doing this, again, that living wage, the way it has entered into the contract market, it's voluntary. It's right. Not a mandatory, it's not forced on people. So I see it as a competitive advantage in very select opportunities and sections. And I'm sure you guys will cover that shortly.
We'll see.
No, we can't. I would just add to that really quickly. I think you're absolutely right. You know, what we do is we're certifying employers that pay a living wage to all their workers. That said, there is also a requirement that within 3 years, their subcontracted workers are also being paid a living wage. So what we're doing here is we're creating a market that applies directly to sort of janitorial workers within a building, where if you're the building owner, you know that you have to make sure that you ask for living wage bids. That's starting to rise. We've seen an incredible impact of doing it that way across the UK, and we're pushing the same thing in the US. That means that if you already know how to assemble a living wage, you know, proposal, if you already know how to make sure that's happening, you're getting out ahead of the game, basically. And you're also looking at moving forward in marketplaces where tenants are starting to demand a living wage, right? So we even have a requirement that even if you're not a building manager or a building owner, if you're a tenant, that you go to your building managers and you say, hey, we want to make sure you're contracting cleaners, for example, that are working in our space for sure, that are getting paid a living wage because we've made this public living wage commitment. And so even if building managers and owners aren't saying, oh, well, we realize that this is great, there's going to be a continued pressure coming from those that are their clients to say, let's push this forward. So it's not just a pressure, but it's also a benefit of business overall. More and more data is coming out to say, hey, and it shouldn't need a lot of research. It should say, hey, if your workers don't have to work two or three jobs to pay for food and housing and some of the essentials, they'll probably be better and more productive at what they're actually doing. You know, if they're able to know that their basic needs are cared for by working for a specific employer and it will remain that way, they're less likely to leave and they're more likely to want to buy in. So there's a, you know, there's a wealth of business benefits, not just because it appeals to, it makes it a competitive bid, but also because you yourself within the business for paying your wages at a higher level are going to experience benefits.
So if I'm an employee working for a cleaning contractor, who decides if I get a living wage or not?
So if you're an employee working for a cleaning contractor, there's multiple decision points. One, your employer can say, you know what, we realize the benefits to ourselves of paying a living wage, so we're going to just do it. And that's something that we're going to do in terms of setting ourselves aside. We do have a sort of household cleaning company that doesn't do large buildings, but does more household, that came in with us early, called Well Paid Maids. And they have made that their business model. They basically put out, we're going to cost a little bit more, but we're going to make sure that our workers are paid a living wage. And it has been incredibly well received, right? It becomes its own business model. Similarly, there are business clients that are looking at the same thing. If you look at who, as a sort of owner or building manager, has been signing on to living wage efforts, those are ones who are going to be really excited by seeing a living wage bid that comes into play. So that's, it's sort of different angles that you're going to have that appeal to.
Okay.
But also for the employee, I mean, the employee, when I speak to contractors, finding people and retaining people, I mean, not even getting to the productivity part, but just in these very tight labor markets, this is such a change. And I've actually seen this in North America, in Canada, a little bit more than I have so far here in the States. So it's kind of interesting about, you know, even before the productivity and the serving your customer, it's just retaining and hiring people to come work for you as a contractor.
Mm-hmm. And Chris, I am going to ask you about how we put that into an RFP response. So be thinking about that as well, because, you know, we got to think about the landing the contract. Michelle, tell us about this. When you talk about living wages, no doubt paying more for your people, tell us about the cost of that and what that means to a business owner or facility management.
Well, I'd say a couple of different things. One, I try to shift the idea from cost to investment, and really thinking of your people as human capital, right? And it's investing in that. But the cost, if you want to talk about it, or the investment amount in pure terms, comes in a few different ways. If you are in a location where prevailing wages are quite high, for example, there's strong union activity, and they've really been able to influence a strong prevailing wage, it may be that there's not much of a difference between living wage and prevailing wage. We always say, go with the higher of the two. There could be a location where the prevailing wages, especially where unions are specifically strong and doing their jobs for workers, are going to be even higher than a living wage, right? And then we say, go with that prevailing wage. You're not competitive otherwise. But there's also lots of places where that prevailing wage doesn't exist, right? That you're going to have to go to a living wage. And there the cost really varies. What we do as living wage for us is we look at every location across the US and we estimate out the cost of living in those locations to set the living wage rates. So if you're in a low cost place, maybe there isn't a huge cost for going in that. Maybe it's just understanding the little bit of a bump that you need to get there, right? In terms of investment. You'll be able to look at whether or not you're in a really high cost location and therefore can say, hey, you know, this is why you can justify why you're putting a higher price on a proposal. You can say, look, the cost of living is higher here. We want to make sure all of our workers that are working on your space are having a decent living. And that sits well, right? It really sits well with building managers because it's based in hard data and real evidence about what that costs. And there's a lot that goes on behind it. The other thing that I would say is the cost depends on total remuneration, right? A living wage should be achieved through a total remuneration package. It's not a matter of if you just went up and you went onto our site and you looked up what the living wage was in the county where you are putting a bid in and said, wow, that's high. Well, maybe, but if you're providing health insurance, if you're providing, you know, retirement savings, there are lots of ways that an employer can contribute to that. And that's what we as Living Wage for Us help with. We've designed online tools. We do assessments. We help you understand how much of your benefits package is actually contributing to a living wage in order to give a really clear sense to employers of what their cost is. Because sometimes they'll notice a smaller gap and realize there are simple moves that can be made that are not that costly that would really be very meaningful to a worker. And that's the kind of thing that we're trying to shed light on.
Okay. So we're talking mainly about building service contractors. Would this also apply to the supply chain, distribution, other parts of the industry?
Yeah, so we're working with employers now. There's some big multinationals that have not yet been certified, so we won't name yet, but that have very long reach across the US in terms of their supply chains, right? They have a lot of US suppliers, they have a lot of global suppliers, but also US located. And those companies, what we're finding is they're interested in saying, the easiest way for us to work with a supplier is if they get certified as a living wage employer, because we know they're paying a living wage, but that they're also willing to say, well, even if a, you know, you're not fully certified, we want to be able to use these tools to assess how far you've gotten, or at least on our contracts, that the workers working on our contracts are in fact topped up to a level where we know we can secure a living wage. And that's because some of the large multinationals aren't just making living wage public commitments for their own workers, they're making them for their supply chains. So they're really starting to push in that direction and how they look at procurement.
Okay. So we mentioned labor unions a little bit ago that might help with prevailing wages, making those higher. Tell us about how they feel. What interaction have you had with labor unions? I know you work with some.
We do. So we, in building our living wage estimates and building our standard and our guidance that we certify to, we did a number of rounds of multi-stakeholder consultation, both with employers from all different perspectives, but also with the labor movement from all different perspectives, including large unions like SEIU that we were able to get some feedback on, and which are very influential in this space, right? And what we often hear is, look, we have the same goal, right? We have the same goal to make this really work for workers in a way that it's sustainable and beneficial and in a long-term way. Mainly what we hear is there's support. It's just a matter of making sure we don't undercut the movement in any way. If you have a particularly powerful labor movement in a specific location, you might have a very strong prevailing wage. And what we're putting forward is a living wage should be a floor, not a ceiling.
Okay.
Right? Like it should be, you're covering basic decency. And then, yeah, there's a lot of space that you can grow from there. And ideally, unions will be able to continually drive that forward and that higher and make sure workers are better taken care of. We're just here to try and say, can we all agree that this should really be the floor? It should be a starting point. And you can move up from there.
Okay. So Michelle, I'll come back to you in a moment because we're going to want to ask you how people, where people go now to learn more and to apply this information. But Chris, back to you. I'm a cleaning contractor. I'm watching this. I'm thinking maybe this is a competitive advantage I need. What do I do? What do I do with my RFPs? Can you put that into words?
I hope. The first thing you do is you go to Michelle's site and you contact her group and you understand the nuances. There's some, as I mentioned earlier, there's some really technical things that they've worked out, and it's incredibly impressive. I'll just give you one example about this, about where the commute zone. So it's not necessarily a metro zone that the wage would be calculated on, but it's this commute zone. And that means that a worker could be living, you know, just on the outside of a county or whatever, a zone, right? And it's within this commuting distance that enables them. So there's a lot of these subtleties that have been worked through and are quantified. And so the first step would be go to Michelle's website and then talk to her team. The second one is to be, as a contractor, is to look for the right opportunity. Okay. When contractors hear the word living wage, and because contractors are, you know, they're profit oriented, and that means managing costs downwards. So when you hear living wage, the first thing is, oh my gosh, right? Because contractors live in an industry, their customers have a history of continually putting pressure on pricing, right? So of course the contractors are, you know, they're always looking at how to optimize their what they're spending. So that the first thing is to realize that as a contractor, you want to find the opportunity. where the customer who is buying your service is going to be interested in this kind of recognition, this kind of support for the community they live in, right? And so that's the first thing, look for that. I don't know in my own experience whether that ties closely to diversity spend. I'm guessing there's some building owner managers, corporations who are interested in that, and they may be more open to that. So as a contractor, I'd be, that first thing would be to find the customers that you think would have that interest in environmental, social, and governance, ESG stuff. The second thing is, when the proposal opportunity in a technical proposal, an RFP comes out, a request for proposal. And in my experience, you rarely, if ever, read in a RFP, they never say, please don't give us an alternative proposal. You know what I mean? They're oftentimes explicitly asking, give us an alternative. What else is out there? How can you help us in ways that we haven't been aware of or thought of? So the second part would be, look for the RFP opportunities and consider, as a consultant, I'm always trying to push my clients, give an alternative proposal, right? Look for a competitive advantage where you can change the conversation. The RFP comes out, it says this, everybody, all your competitors are bidding on this, an alternative proposal. And you have to state it clearly in the document, right? It's outside of that. It's an alternative. Now, oftentimes, customers will only evaluate the required technical proposal. But by adding in an alternative proposal, it gives you, the contractor, a little competitive advantage, because now you've changed the conversation. It's no longer just about this. You can now say, what about this? So the third step is, when you do submit an alternative proposal, you call it out as alternative. You specify that it has separate pricing, right? Because it's going to have a different, higher price tag possibly. But that will give you, I believe, this is a competitive advantage that a lot of contractors can sign up to. And Michelle, apologies if I get this wrong, but my understanding is that as a contractor, you can start by a bid by bid basis, right? You have a contract with a big location, right? And it's a technical RFP. You give your alternative. It's just for that location. And I want to state again, because I work with contractors, it's voluntary. It's not mandatory. So if you are in an RFP and don't feel like giving an alternative proposal, don't. If you're in an RFP and you want to give an alternative proposal but don't want to do living wage, don't. You know, so I find this a really compelling narrative, because as a consultant, that's what we're always trying to build in a proposal. We want to change the conversation for our client, our contractor, to have a better story. And the living wage is a better story on so many fronts that it's not a fiction. It's a reality that, as Michelle has said earlier, I think of it as a wave. It's coming. It's not going to be forced on you. But when the market changes, because of all the things that are happening with the labor market, the labor pool in general, right? I think with the pandemic, lasting effects will be to have this tide coming in. And I'd rather surf that tide than be turned over in the undertow.
Yes. And Michelle mentioned earlier that this is not a new thing, but to many of us, it is kind of new, because we see it's emerging. It's maybe getting a foothold. Michelle, you must feel good when you know someone's making a little bit more money for their family because of your efforts.
I do. I mean, that's really what this is about, is thinking. The reason our name is Living Wage for us is we think of living wage as being something that should be for employers and business, for workers, for communities, and for all of us. So we're really realizing that this is an opportunity for you to create a win-win-win, right? And why not take that? And it goes to a lot of what Chris said, where this is a place where you can be competitive. It will increasingly be demanded. The more that building owners are saying, we're making public commitments on this, the more they'll say, we only want living wage proposals, right? you can get out ahead of that and say, let's do this in a way that we know our workers are doing better. We can see that that's better for our business. That has huge benefits for communities where workers have more time to be involved with their kids, to be involved with, you know, their own community at large. It has so many knock-on effects that it's unbelievable. I mean, even when you come into some of our very politically divided climate, we know across the US, right? Well, that often is decreased when people are able to meet all of their needs. And we often, and what we have is more than 50% of our population that's living on less than a living wage. So yeah, it's going to cause instability in so many ways. This is really a situation of thinking about how can I do something that's good for me in the way that Chris put it, that's competitive, that's good for me as a business owner, as a contractor, that's good for everyone that works for me, because I don't want to live on the backs of somebody else that's suffering. And that's going to be a huge benefit to all. So yeah, I feel great, because I don't think that there are losers in the living wage game, honestly. And that's why I call it an investment, not a cost.
Oh, thank you for that. So to wrap up, let's talk about, if someone's interested in doing this, how can they contact you? And I'm going to put your website right under your picture there. So go ahead and tell us about that.
Sure. So you can get in touch with me directly if you want to email me at michelle@livingwageforus.org. I'll tell me what your questions are. I'll make sure if it's not me, I can get you to the right person here that can help you through the next stage of your process. And you can take a look at, we have our methodology for calculating living wage, our living wage rates across the country on a map, our standard, our guidance, you know, all the sort of core information that you're going to need to know to understand the work that we do is mostly visible on our website. So take a look around. We do work with employers from two different angles, either getting certified, which means all your operations are paying a living wage, or doing exactly what Chris mentioned, saying we want to understand what we would need to do to put in a living wage bid. What would that cost? We'll give you that information. We're here to be supportive. So, you know, feel free to reach out, even if you have questions and you just want to figure out how to look at this or what data should you be examining? Where do we start? We're happy to sort of provide that to you as well.